This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Lake Champlain stretches more than 125 miles. Its tip is in southern Quebec, and then it runs the border between Vermont and New York. It's possible to sail or motor from the Atlantic Ocean, up the Hudson River in New York, into the man-made Champlain canals, and on into the lake. Then you can continue north, following the flow of the water into the Richelieu River, emptying out into the St. Lawrence, and then flowing all the way back to the Atlantic Ocean on the broad St. Lawrence Bay. At times, some boosters have pushed to make Champlain the sixth Great Lake, and though it can't really compete in size, it is the next largest freshwater lake in the country. Sometimes you can even get a little bit of lake effect weather patterns. So Champlain has its own ecosystem and its own culture, and today on the show we're going to focus on some of the human activity on the lake. We talk a lot about pollution, about invasive species, about infrastructure, but we've never looked at the boating culture of the lake, which is a big deal to a lot of people in the region. From kayaks to racing yachts to speedy motorboats, this lake is a boater's paradise. I'm joined today by Aaron Moreau, City of Burlington Waterfront Coordinator, who's with us to talk a little bit about the boating culture. Aaron, it's such a nice pleasure to have you on the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're also going to have by phone now Eric Tishinuk, who's Executive Director of the Lake Champlain Maritime Museum. Hi, Eric. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you very much, Jane. And hello, Aaron.
Hi, Eric.
So does everybody know each other, everybody who works in this kind of arena? Eric and Aaron, you know each other?
Absolutely. We're friends from a long time ago, and I think boaters and people who use Lake Champlain, you've identified it. It is a culture. It's great to be part of it. We do look out for each other.
Well, we actually got an email from one of our listeners who touched on that subject. Dan says, I grew up sailing on Lake Michigan in Chicago for most of my teen years. From my experience, the boating culture on Lake Michigan was more disconnected and less community-based, mainly because of the size and the lack of interaction between boaters. I've now been working at the marina on Lake Champlain for 4 years now, Dan says, and what I've come to appreciate is that there's more of a community feel with the boaters here. The interaction between local U.S. boaters and Canadian boaters on this lake gives it a flair, and it adds culture to our lake and area. He says, I hope we as a boating community can grow with the increase of tourists, respect our lake, protect our waterfronts, and share the beauty of this lake with others for years to come. Aaron Moreau, what's your sense? I mean, for somebody who's, you know, like me, actually, who's not big into motorboating, who doesn't own a sailboat, and who doesn't live right on Lake Champlain, what's the culture of boating on the lake?
It's very unique, especially because of our location. We're a very seasonal state. So this is not a year-round activity up here. So when summer hits, it hits strong. The community is strong. People are waiting to get out on their boats in the spring. And because of that, it's a very joyous atmosphere. We know summer is limited, and so we make sure that we make the most of it. And that's, you know, I have seasonal boaters here at the marina in Burlington, and it's a tight-knit little community. They know each other. They've gotten to know each other. Picture neighbors in your neighborhood. Well, your neighbor at your boat slip is all of 3 or 4 feet away from you. So you get to know your neighbors, and they really become close. And then you add in the transient boaters, folks that are coming from all different locations to stay with us. And you get to know them year after year. They come. We have a high population coming down from Quebec. And it's fantastic. The input that you just gave, the international flair, it really does wonders. It creates this great atmosphere. And it's joyous. We know it's a short season, so we have a good time, and it's great to hear the stories of people over their past year and hear where they go off to travel to. Like you said, you can connect out to the ocean from Lake Champlain. So some of our boaters that we saw last summer have had fantastic trips that they'll come and tell us all about this year.
We are talking about boating, and listeners, I want to let you know, if you want to chime in, if you've got a story to share, if this is something that your family participates in and you want to tell us about it, whether it's sailing or kayaking, or if you've got a motorboat and you find islands that you travel to that other people can't get to by car. You can call us at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Dick and Libby emailed in to say, Lake Champlain is our home. My wife and I live on a sailboat year-round. We spend 3 months on Champlain, 5 months in the Florida Keys, and 4 months migrating. We've been doing this for nearly 10 years. What's the reward? Well, on a clear day, seeing the view of the mountains on both sides from the middle of the lake renews our souls for another year. Lake Champlain is the only lake in Vermont offering access to the sea, a very important characteristic. And you can see us several times per year anchored near Perkins Pier or at the base of Vergennes Falls. So there, Aaron, what you were saying, people who are traveling all around the place and then come back in the summertime. Eric Tishinick, what about for you? What would you add to the flavor and the character of boating on the lake?
Well, I think that the uniqueness of being on the water brings people together, and you see that in particular. It's not unlike a snowstorm. When a snowstorm occurs, people pitch in, help one another out, dig out their neighbor's driveway, et cetera. There's nothing like a little bit of tension in the neighborhood to help bring people closer together. And heavy weather on Lake Champlain can bring people closer together. Boaters are very quick to go to the aid of others on the water. And there is that sense of community and friendship of multiple users on Lake Champlain. I love the person you just quoted who travels around. I once heard a captain say, why would I have a house when I can live on a boat and have my view change every single day? So it's a unique way to look at the world.
Eric, do you boat on the lake?
I certainly do, on many different ways. The Lois McClure is the Maritime Museum's 88-foot canal schooner. It's an 1862 replica. And for years, I traveled on that boat and traveled all of these waterways, including even the Erie Canal out to Buffalo. We've been up to Quebec City, and right now the boat is on its way to New York City, and I've got a chance to meet not only the boaters but also the communities along the way. The other way I get out on Lake Champlain is during our diving activities. We have a team of underwater archaeologists, and we actually go out and document and work on the over 300 shipwrecks that are on the bottom of Lake Champlain. So, yes, I'm a familiar user of the lake.
Well, I wanted to ask you about those shipwrecks, Eric, because, you know, the history of the lake is full of interesting tidbits. I mean, not only do we have skirmishes that have led to shipwrecks, but the lake was also used for trade and for commercial purposes in the past. Can you just trace the history in that direction?
Sure. You're absolutely right. There were three military conflicts that occurred from the French and Indian War to the American Revolution. And, of course, this year is the 200th anniversary, the commemoration of the Battle of Plattsburgh for the War of 1812. So all of those saw boat building activity and action taking place. But when we finally do have peace in the Champlain Valley and the addition of the canals at both ends of the lake, the ability to bring materials into and take materials out of the Champlain Valley becomes easy and the most convenient way to transport goods. So we actually, on Lake Champlain, over the course of about 100 years, we would construct about 4,000 boats just designed to go through the canal system, canal boats. And, of course, those boats met their demise on Lake Champlain through a number. Some were just abandoned, others caught in storms, et cetera, and they have added to the collection of incredibly well-preserved shipwrecks on the bottom of the lake.
And do we still have trade and commercial purposes going on the lake? I mean, I know we have the ferries, but are we seeing barges transporting goods on Lake Champlain?
Not any longer. The last commercial traffic that was on Lake Champlain that was using the canal would have been the Mobile 1 units that were coming up with oil to the Burlington waterfront, to the tank farms that were there. But that has ceased. Now, as economics change, the canal is still open and in operation, and as the price of fuel continues to go up, it is a very economical way to move goods, and it could potentially be used for commercial purposes. The Erie Canal is seeing a revival of commercial activity already.
Aaron Moreau, so mostly recreational use then for the lake, at least for right now, although as we heard from Eric, we have a rich history of multi-purpose use on the lake. How does everybody get along? I mean, you've got all these different kinds of boaters, from people who are using their own muscle power to get around, to sailboats, to speedy motorboats, and some of them have water skiers. How does everybody coexist on the lake?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because they do, as Eric said, there's a great sense of camaraderie on the lake. And I think everyone finds their niche spot as well. You know, you see the paddlers often staying closer to shore and finding these quiet bays. I see a lot of sailboats and powerboats coming into the marina here in Burlington. They all have their favorite getaway spots, though. It's great. Just before leaving, I asked one of the dock masters at work, hey, what's your favorite place to throw an anchor? And he said, Slide Runner Cove in Shelburne, right away. Didn't even have to think. So I think the lake is large enough where there are these unique little spots. I mean, we're blessed with an absolutely gorgeous lake and these views that you really can't go wrong. I see people when they want to come in, they want to be around people. They want to come to Burlington and experience what Burlington has to offer. And so I'm an interesting port on the lake in the sense that I'm not rural where other places are. So when they come here, they want to experience the vibrancy of Burlington Harbor, which is a busier place, and the vibrancy of our town.
So if I'm on a motorboat, a powerboat, and I'm coming from Canada and I want to hang out in Burlington and I come to the Burlington waterfront, is it like going to one of the city parking garages? I can just pull up and park my boat somewhere?
We would want you to call in, that's for sure. We're busy, but it's really neat. The use of VHF radios is very much the primary source of our communication in the marine world. So, and it's a neat way to meet people. People call in as they get close to Burlington. Hello, boathouse. I'm coming in. I'm a 40-foot sailboat. Do you have any space for me? And I will walk them through. Would you like a mooring? Would you like a dock slip? Are you looking for just a few hours to pick up some groceries? Or are you looking for an overnight? And so once we start getting this information, the dock masters will look, see what we have available, and call it back out. And chances are, once we broadcast that out on the radio, there's another boat that hears it and calls in.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Exactly. It's really fun. It's really neat.
We got a note from Ron in Essex Junction who says, our family, parents, two kids, and a dog are cruising the lake on our 29-foot sailboat. We sit out without any agenda other than dropping into our favorite spots on the lake. Our typical cruising grounds are Charlotte to Deep Bay. Our home port is Colchester. We meet new people on our trips and often see the same cruisers year after year. We look out for each other and we show much respect for the lake. The one thing we would like others to do on the lake is leave no trace. Respect the harbors and islands and keep it clean for the next cruiser that comes through. And let's go to Chris calling in from Winooski. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
So basically, just a quick comment. You know, I've kept a boat in Shelburne since I was 12 years old. I got my license on my 12th birthday, and I just love being out on the water because it's a place that's immediately uplifting. Whether it's French Canadians or Vermonters, New Yorkers, or even the Coast Guard, you wave, they wave back, they smile. And, you know, it's a big, heavy world out there, but when you're out on the lake, there's just so much positivity. It's really impressive.
Chris, thank you so much for your comments. I appreciate that. We also heard from Garrett, who says, growing up on Lake Champlain in Rouses Point, New York, boating and simply being on the water are the most vivid memories of my childhood. Whether it was riding around in my grandfather's fishing boat or cruising during a sunset on a friend's sailboat, being on the lake is the center of my universe. It's a mystical, majestic place. Nowadays, living in Western North Carolina, I reflect fondly and yearn for the beloved waters of my youth. And we got a note also from Will Patton, who's the Commodore of the Royal Savage Yacht Club in Charlotte, who shared this story. We all love Lake Champlain. It's beautiful to look at and fun to play in. But for most of its life, the lake has been a battleground and a commercial highway. The Royal Savage Yacht Club recently decided to learn about the lake's military history the old-fashioned way by traveling in slow boats to all points on the lake of military significance and walking the land and hearing the stories. To truly understand how important Lake Champlain was and is, nothing beats a slow boat to the actual ground where the history was made. You know, speaking of slow boats and historical replicas, Eric Tishinuk, you were mentioning that the Maritime Museum has replica ships of the kind that used to ply the waters of Lake Champlain. And do people have a chance to go out on them and experience the lake that way?
Yeah, we have two replicas, the Lois McClure, which I already mentioned, and I loved Will's, I know Will very well, and I loved his slow motion analogy there. We travel at 5 miles an hour with the Lois McClure. That's about her maximum speed unless we have a full press of canvas sailing. And it's really a unique way to see the world. It forces you to slow down. And if you haven't, everybody should be made to experience that speed. I tell you, when you go from here to Buffalo at 5 miles an hour, it's a whole new appreciation for the landscape. and we also have the Philadelphia, which is a copy of one of Benedict Arnold's gunboats from 1776, right here at the Maritime Museum at Basin Harbor. And in both instances, we don't take people out sailing on those boats because they were built historically accurate based upon the shipwrecks. They don't meet Coast Guard standards to take passengers out, but we do allow people to get on board while they're at the dock, and there's no better way to learn about that history than to step on board.
Well, and you actually do have programs for people who want to build their own boats.
Yes, that's right. We build boats with both youth as well as adults here at the Maritime Museum. Probably our longest standing and most successful program is called Champlain Longboats. We spend one semester of high school for students here in Addison County. They can come down. They build a boat with us for a five-month period of time, and those boats have been added to a fleet now of some 15 to 16 boats we have, which are part of a community as well as youth rowing program. There's now seven area schools that participate in this rowing program. So another great way to get on the water. You can come down, join us in our community rowing program, and we run boats out of Basin Harbor, up in Virgins, and even up in Aaron's neck of the woods in Burlington.
Well, Aaron, maybe you could pick that up, too. I mean, for people who don't have their own boats, this can feel like a very expensive and elitist kind of hobby that we're talking about. So what about opportunities for people to get this kind of experience, like what Eric is talking about with boat building, or for young people to be able to have a kind of experience where they know what this is like without having to spend a lot of money that they may not have?
Yes, and that's a great thing to highlight because there are multiple ways to get out on the water here in Burlington. If you don't want to captain your own ship, so to speak, here, we have captains over at the boathouse that'll take you out. Two boats, the Friendship and Let's Go Sailing. You bring your friends, you hop on board, and out you go. They're going to take you out for a two and a half hour sail, and you know, I think the sunset sail is by far the most popular, and I've been known to join one of those as well. Those are really nice. We also have a plethora of boat rental places popping up over at North Beach, the Community Sailing Center. You can rent small sailboats and stand-up paddle boards. Stand-up paddle boarding is another very popular new trend that we're seeing here on the lake. We have a rental place over at Oakledge Park as well. So no matter the talent, the ability, the want or need to go fast or slow, there's opportunities, which is really great. And another thing to highlight about seeing the lake and slowing down and having that time to reflect is not many people may realize that Burlington is also connected into the Lake Champlain Paddlers Trail, which is really neat. It's so many different locations on, and they're highlighted by these little signs along the waterway. So you can go from site to site, and you have this little guidebook. Perkins Pier and Letty and Oakledge are part of that as well. So to get out on the lake, not as hard as you may think. And the neat part about the marina that I'm at, the Community Boathouse, is we're the Community Boathouse. We are a public marina. Anyone can come down to our front dock, sit in an Adirondack chair, and watch the sun go down. It's really neat.
That does sound pretty nice. Eric Tishinuk, for you, looking at the long view here of Lake Champlain from its history to the present day, do you still see the lake as important to Vermont and upstate New York as it was historically?
Absolutely. The uses have changed, whether you're talking about Native American occupation, military, commercial use. You know, we used to say there was four eras. To that, we would add recreation. But now we're into, I have to kind of add on to the recreation and say conservation and stewardship. I think there's a heightened sense of awareness of the need to care for Lake Champlain for future generations. And although the use has changed dramatically over that time frame, it still holds a very important place in our hearts and our culture, and people are recognizing that and acknowledging it by expressing the need to care for it.
Eric Tishinuk is Executive Director of the Lake Champlain Maritime Museum. Eric, thank you very much for being on the program with us today.
Thank you.
We are talking about boating culture on Lake Champlain. Aaron Moreau, City of Burlington Waterfront Coordinator, is with us. And we're going to talk a little bit more about safety and security on the lake as we continue this conversation about boating culture. And we hope to hear from more of you who are sharing your thoughts on why boating is important to you and how you use Lake Champlain. It is a huge resource in our region, for Quebec, for New York, for Vermont, and for people who travel around and use the Lake Champlain byways as a way to get from one place to another. So share your thoughts with us. Call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We are talking about all of the boating activity that goes on Lake Champlain with Aaron Moreau, City of Burlington Waterfront Coordinator. And if you want to tell us how you use the lake, call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can always post on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We're hearing from many of you with many different ways that you access the lake and use it. Paul in Bridport says, I'm a windsurfer. Windsurfers enjoy heavy weather on the lake. Sailing in 30-knot winds and 10 to 12-foot swells out near Colchester Reef has given me the best sailing experience I've ever had anywhere. We also heard from Patrick Standen, president of the Northeast Disabled Athletic Association. And Patrick says, I just wanted listeners to know that the NDAA offers adaptive sailing, kayaking, and even water sit-skiing opportunities for Vermonters with physical disabilities. We want to make the beauty of Lake Champlain open to all and offer lessons and rentals aboard our innovative and fully accessible Martin 16 in Mallets Bay. In fact, Patrick says, we just hosted a regatta for disabled sailors that witnessed a record number of sailors from all over North America race in Lake Champlain. And finally, we heard from Steve in Burlington, who perhaps doesn't love the community aspect and community feel of Lake Champlain. He says, oh, no, Steve in Burlington just wants to know about large number of French-speaking customers. I don't want to make him be the one who's a loner. We got Joe, who says, when I'm on the lake or on shore, I basically want to be alone and do not care for any human interaction. Joe is the one who doesn't want any human interaction. So I guess it's all there for you, whether you want to see people or not. Again, share your thoughts with us at vpr.net or 1-800-639-2211. But I did start in on Steve in Burlington. Aaron Moreau, maybe you can pick this up. He wants to know, what steps have you taken to accommodate the large number of French-speaking customers who use Burlington's marinas?
That's a great question. During the height of our season, so looking at the end of June right through until the middle of August, easily said about 75%, even up to 80% of our customers are from Canada and are French Canadian. The neat part about this is we have taken steps. So I have about 5 dockmasters at the boathouse that can speak French, and we keep trying to add more French speakers to our staff. Anyone from who's checking the boaters in to our overnight security to who is out on the boats and on the docks helping people in. It makes our docks and our city vibrant, because not only do they come into our marina, but they're heading up into town, and it really helps make Burlington, Burlington.
Well, let's bring in another voice here. Jerry Johnson is the Vermont State Police Marine Division Education Coordinator. He joins me on the line now. Hi, Jerry. Nice to talk with you.
Good afternoon, Jane. Nice to talk with you.
So we were just getting into the French-speaking boaters who come in from Quebec, and I know you're not Border Patrol, but I wanted to ask you about how we patrol the lake, and what about those aspects of the fact that this is an internationally crossing lake? So how do you deal with that as a part of the State Police Marine Division?
Well, I can tell you that most of our officers that are out there, I mean, they're not French-speaking, but fortunately, most of our Canadian visitors, if not all, are English-speaking. So we have not had a communication problem out there, as far as I know. I mean, all our officers have told me that cooperation on the part of our Canadian visitors has been gone quite well. We also have what we call the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators has a cross-border agreement, if you will, a memorandum of understanding with our Canadian folks that we accept the same safety equipment they have as we require here. So it works out very well, actually. So we don't see a problem out there at all.
And do you have to carry your passport? I mean, is there like a border crossing in the same way?
You got a good question there. I, like I said, that would probably be more of a question for the Border Patrol.
Yeah.
I do know that they have to obtain some sort of like a visa permit or a visitor permit or something when they cross the border. And I do know that they have to report in. They usually have to stop, like if they're coming from the Rouses Point area, if they're coming through there. Rouses Point, I believe, is a place where they do need to stop and report. So they can't just cross the border and come on in without checking in with our customs people and Border Patrol people.
You mentioned that safety equipment is fairly universal. You have to have the safety equipment, and whether you're on the U.S. side or the Canadian side.
Correct.
But what about the rules for people who want to use Lake Champlain? I understand that before someone operates a motorized boat on the lake, there's some requirements from the state of Vermont.
Exactly. The big move on nationally is actually to make sure that people are getting educated. The state of Vermont has been on board for quite a while with what we call mandatory boater safety ed. Since July of 1991, the governor signed into law our mandatory education law for boating safety. Any person born after January 1st, 1974 must attend an approved boating safety course, obtain a boater safety certificate before they operate any motorized vessel on the waters of Vermont.
Let's go to the calls. We've got Erica in Ferrisburg. Hi, Erica. Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to go back a little ways to your guest from the Maritime Museum and add that my husband last year got this kind of crazy idea in his head about reopening the commercial waterways between Lake Champlain and New York City. And he got together with a bunch of people, including the Willowell Foundation in Moncton, and built a boat. And they, in fact, did sail it down. They filled it full of goods from producers, both on the New York side and Vermont side of Lake Champlain, and sailed it down there. So it's not entirely true that commercial use has gone downhill.
Well, that's very cool, Erica. Thank you. Yeah, some commercial use still on Lake Champlain. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. Jim is calling in from Montreal. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi. Further to the gentleman who talked about doing the tour of the lake by boat, I'd love to have the ability to do that. My boats aren't big enough. But for people who don't have boats, I'd really encourage you to, particularly if you've got kids, take a driving tour of the lake, including Illimat, where Champlain landed, Fort Montgomery up at Rouses Point. The Plattsburgh Museum has a great recreation of the war, the Battle of Plattsburgh from 1814. There's the fort at Crown Point, Fort Ticonderoga. If you're trying to explain some geography to your kids, take them to the feeder canal at Glens Falls that then feeds the high point of the canal, up to Whitehall, where there's a bit of an explanation of the canal and how it works. The Virgins, where there was a lot of boat building going on back, I'm not sure whether it was the War of 1812 or the War of Independence. The Maritime Museum, which is phenomenal, both the Philadelphia and the Lois McClure. If you haven't seen them, you really should, because they're part of your history. I say your because I'm calling you from Canada. and my highlight at the Maritime Museum was Sunfish Number One, which I've had I've had a sunfish on Lake Champlain since a teenager, and it was just a treat to see where it all began with that boat at the Maritime Museum. So I really encourage people to explore the lake, understand the history, understand the importance of the commerce, and how the canal was built and used for the commerce.
Yeah, Jim, thanks. I appreciate your comment. It's nice to hear from you from Montreal. You know, as we talk about this whole conversation about boating, we have done a lot of talk about motorized boating. And regardless, motorized or sailing, not probably so much kayaking, although kayaking, canoeing as well. Jerry Johnson, I want to bring you in here, because there are some safety considerations that people need to be thinking about, whether it's paying attention to the weather to make sure that you're out in conditions that are appropriate for your skill level, or whether it's thinking about how much you're drinking. I mean, summertime, alcohol, boating, those often go together for people. So maybe you could address some of the big safety concerns.
Oh, absolutely, Jane. I can tell you my experience from the Coast Guard. I spent 20 years in the Coast Guard dealing with boating safety. I've been with the Marine Division now for over 19 years, and I can tell you, most of the time, people think when they're going out on the lake, they're going to recreate. So the last thing they think about, I can tell you, most people, the last thing they think about is safety, which they should be thinking of first. I mean, life jackets. Make sure you have your life jackets with you. You should be checking the weather. On a day like today, even, the Coast Guard has already put out a high wind warning. So you need to listen to that weather forecast. You need to check it before you go. Although it may look nice in the morning, we could have very strong thunderstorms in the afternoon. You just don't know. So you need to check that weather. And, of course, you need to be in an appropriate vessel. I mean, if you're going kayaking out now on Lake Champlain, it would kind of be a little bit foolish thing to do, because the winds are picking up, the thunderstorms are coming in, and it wouldn't be a good idea to be out there. But the big thing about it is make sure you're prepared. You know, anything that lake can turn bad very fast, and I'm sure everybody would echo that with me. So it's very important to be prepared out there. Make sure you, and I can't overemphasize the life jacket part of it. It's not mandatory that you wear it if you're over the age of 12. However, it is mandatory that you have it with you. And that's an important point to have. Make sure you have that life jacket with you, and be able to put it on in a fairly quick manner if you're not wearing it.
Aaron Moreau, I see you nodding your head here about safety and specifically about life jackets.
Absolutely. Having such a close view and window to the lake, it can be startling how fast the weather conditions can change on Lake Champlain, and they can really catch people off guard. Jerry's right. Be prepared, be safe, and you'll have a good time on the lake. We don't want to see anyone out there stranded in over their heads of not being prepared. And weather can change fast here. You know, you see it roll over the Adirondacks, and it's on you before you know it.
What about that idea of alcohol? I mean, we know that alcohol is a part of a lot of people's recreation. You must see people who come in intoxicated, and how do you address that?
You know, thankfully, that's rare. I think people get it. When you're behind a wheel, you're behind a wheel, and there's responsibility that
and
comes
laws.
With that. And laws. Yeah, absolutely. And the state police do a great job keeping these waters safe as well. And, you know, in the rare occurrences that we see people that are heading to their boat on the docks, and either they've been enjoying beverages and going on their boats, that's something that I'm comfortable going over and say, are you really sure you want to do this? I think it's best if you leave your keys and you leave your boat here. If you're already docked, I don't mind putting you up overnight. I've never had a case where they said, no, I think I'm going to leave. So that's something that in our job we take seriously. We do not want to see anyone who's intoxicated get behind the wheel.
We got a note from a kayaker who says, while most boaters find their niche based on the type of craft they're on, those niches are sometimes forced on them by some irresponsible boaters who reach speeds of up to 74 miles per hour and make some areas of the lake totally unsafe for smaller, slower craft. Yet there seems to be no enforcement of existing laws which require all boats to slow down when passing other boats within a certain distance. Jerry Johnson, can you address that listener's concern?
Oh, absolutely. We do have a distance requirement here in the state of Vermont, and so does New York. On the New York side, it's 100 feet. On the Vermont side, it's actually 200 feet. If you're within 200 feet of another vessel, a swimmer in the water, a boat at anchor, docks, just about anything. And also, for those of you who use the Burlington waterfront, inside the breakwater on the Burlington waterfront, it's 5 miles an hour or less and not creating a wake. And that's what the 200-foot distance requirement is. True, there are some people who don't obey that, who don't know what that law is, simply because they have not taken a boating safety course yet or are not required to. Like I said to earlier, Jane, anybody born prior to January 1st, 1974 is what we call grandfathered. They're not required to take the course. However, we do encourage that people do take a course if they're new to boating or if they've never taken one before so that they know what our laws are. That is one of the most popular violations that we have. We have two violations that we write, I should say, not quite frequently, but our most popular violations are either the lack of life jackets or the proper life jackets on board, or the distance requirement, people violating that distance requirement and coming within 200 feet of something and going faster than 5 miles an hour and creating a wake. That is not permitted. That is a violation of the law. If it is seen by a law enforcement officer, of course, we can write a violation. But we can't be, unfortunately, we can't be everywhere at once, as everyone knows. So we do our best, though, and we do write quite a few of those violations.
Well, there we go on safety. I appreciate your time. Jerry Johnson is Vermont State Police Marine Division Education Coordinator. Thank you very much for telling us a little bit about safety on the lake. Appreciate that.
You're welcome, Jane. Thank you for inviting me.
We've also been speaking with Aaron Moreau, City of Burlington Waterfront Coordinator. Are you headed now back out, right out to the lake?
Back to the water I go.
So you just can't resist. You have to be there all the time.
I love it there.
Aaron, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we're actually going to stay on the water. We're going to speak with a Vermonter who is preparing for an attempt to swim the English Channel. Bethany Bosch will join us next on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last September, Wallingford long-distance swimmer Bethany Bosch was one of two people to swim the length of Lake Memphremagog. That swim was one step in her preparation for an even bigger goal, to swim the English Channel. Bosch is planning to make an attempt at the channel in just a couple of weeks now, and before she leaves Vermont, we wanted to check in with her. Bethany Bosch, it's nice to have you back on Vermont Edition.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jane.
So when do you actually get to drop into the water and start swimming to France?
Well, actually, I don't know. I have a tide that I've booked a boat pilot to escort me at any point where the weather is good between September 1st and September 6th of this year.
So when do you head over? You're going to be there a little bit in advance of that, or do you just get there and hope that...
No, I will get over there a little bit early. I'm leaving August 26th, I'll actually arrive on the 27th, so that'll give me a couple days to kind of get in the water, get used to it, get all my stuff together, get my crew there, briefed, ready to go, and then I'll call my boat captain and let him know that I'm ready whenever he's ready. And then we just kind of wait for him to call.
Our line's a little bad. It almost sounds a little bit like we've got you on the water right now, but I can hear what you're saying. So I understand, Bethany, that actually when you try to prep for a swim like this, there are a ton of logistics. You had to book a boat 2 years in advance. You have to put up a crew in a hotel for the duration of your visit as you're getting ready to swim and waiting for the conditions. And as you just said, you have to wait for the right conditions. So let's talk a little bit about logistics, because I find this fascinating. First of all, why do you have to book a boat so far in advance? I mean, why can't you just show up, get some guy with a motorboat, and have him rent it out to you?
There's a couple of things in play there. So the first thing is, you want to have the best chance of making it,
right? Right.
So you want to book a boat captain who really knows what he's doing and who can really plot your course based on your speed and navigate you through, giving you the most likely chance to succeed. And with that is the tide, right? So they look at the tides in advance and they say, okay, well, this is going to be the best tide in 2014, these weeks. And so boat captains will only take up to four swimmers during that week, one at a time. So I wanted to get you know, the best chance of being able to go, being able to make it. So, you know, I asked other swimmers, I got some advice, and I queried several boat captains about the time frame I was looking at, you know, when it's the warmest, and, you know, kind of all of those factors. And so that was kind of how I narrowed it down to, you know, a couple of boat captains who had availability still at that point.
So even though you're swimming, the boat captain and the boat that goes along with you is actually a very important part of ensuring success or hoping for success.
Right, right. So, yeah, and then, you know, just all of the kind of things about that, you know, swimming, you want to swim with the water. You don't want to swim, you know, against it. So, you know, picking the lesser tide and those kinds of factors, you know, and especially for me, I'm a little bit slower than, you know, some of these people who have been swimming forever. And so I just wanted to make sure that I had, you know, really the best chance and a really good boat captain. And so I picked a number two slot in his roster. The number one slot is booked, you know. So that was kind of one of the factors, too. Where am I in the line of swimmers who are waiting to swim? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be number four because I'm coming all the way from the United States. So that was a big factor in it, too, and why you don't want to wait, you know, to book if you're going to swim. So.
And what about your crew? How many people and what do they do for you?
Well, so I have four people who are going to come over because I'm, like I said, a little bit slower. So and another friend of mine who's about my speed that I met over in Ireland at our training camp, she had four people. So I just thought, oh, that's, you know, that's good, a good number. You know, because you always want eyes on you. You always need to have somebody watching you and, you know, making your feed mix, your nutrition, counting your strokes, making sure you're doing well. And that's a lot to ask of people, you know. I mean, you know, there's a lot going on there. So, but I have my friend Natalie, who's actually the president of Intrepid Athletics, who's sponsoring me. And she has been crewing for me forever. And so she knows everything about me and my swimming. And so she's going to be kind of in charge of everything. And then I have my friend David, and he swam the channel last year. And he's kind of been a coach and really helped me improve my speed. He gave me lots of great advice and tips. So, and he's come along on a lot of my swims as well and offered advice and input, you know, from all of his vast experiences with swimming. And then I also have a friend who's a nurse, and she'll be on there, you know, just in case something goes wrong. You know, it's good to have somebody who's got that experience. And her husband is my minister, and so they will all be there just to be an extra set of eyes. And it seems like I've got a good crew, so I'm really excited about that.
I'm talking with Bethany Bosch, who's preparing for a swim across the English Channel, hoping to make that swim successfully at the very beginning of September. Bethany, what is the mental preparation like for a swim like this?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of things I do. You know, when I'm swimming, you know, I've gone to a lot of different training camps and stuff. And so a lot of it is just knowing that I can do it, that I've made myself the kind of swimmer who can swim the English Channel. You know, I made a list of things I needed to do, long swims, cold water swims, salt water swims, you know, all of the things I needed to do, speed work. And then I just, over the last 3 years, have, you know, checked those off one at a time, choosing events to do it. So I'm coming in with all of this swimming experience and sort of knowing that in my mind, I've done this, I can do this. That goes a long way towards, you know, your mental health during the swim. And, you know, drawing on those experiences and just sort of knowing, okay, I made myself this kind of swimmer. I can do this. So there's that aspect of it. You know, another part of it is being around friends and family who are so supportive, who are so encouraging. You know, when I swim, I sing a lot. So I listen to music that I like that will, you know, be really uplifting to me during my swims. And I just think of, you know, people back home and the things I want to do with my swimming. I want to give back to the community through my swimming, and I think about ways I can do that, and you know, just kind of keep myself in a happy place and not think that I'm cold or that I hurt or any of that. So,
Bethany, I understand, we just have a couple seconds left, but I understand that people who want to show their support can actually help see you off this Saturday.
Yes, they can. We're having a pool party. It's going to be at White's Pool in Rutland. We partnered with the Rutland Rec Department and Intrepid Athletics to just kind of give me a send-off. But all of the proceeds go to White's Pool and the Rutland Rec Department to help them with their swimming programs. And so that's this Saturday from 1 to 6. And we just want to celebrate swimming and have a good time. There'll be games, music, food. You know, it'll be a really great event, and I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope everyone comes out.
Bethany Bosch is a long-distance swimmer who lives in Wallingford. In September, she plans to attempt to swim the English Channel. Bethany, best of luck. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much, Jane.
All right, that will do it for today's show, and we'll keep you posted on what happens with Bethany's swim. Tomorrow on the program, brick and mortar is out, virtual is in. Nationally, over 3 million workers work full-time from home. And if you include all workers who work at least one day a week from home, we may be looking as much as 30% of the workforce. We're going to get a sense of what these workers look like, and we'll learn how they can boost Vermont's rural economy tomorrow on the program. If you're a telecommuter, you can send us a note about your experience, write to Vermont Edition at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.